I really like those hash browns at the Menlo Park Mall. There was a, at the food court, there was a place, I don't remember the name of it, but it was sort of like a Southwest grill. I kind of remember like those colors, kind of like a magenta, an orange, like a blue. It sort of was like the desert with like coyotes. I can't remember the name of the place though, but they had these hash browns. And they were little like discs. I mean, I guess hash browns and tater tots are kind of in the same sort of continuum of potato-based products that are so good. And these were like little discs, like hash brown discs. They were maybe about an inch across and maybe a half inch high, right? And then they came in a little, I think like a little wax paper bag kind of thing. And I just remember getting those at the mall. I used to love going to Menlo. Sometimes maybe even like, after work or whatever, I would go there and just like wander around. This would be like in the 1990s, but I always remember those hash browns. It's funny because like, I don't have any consistent like hash brown or tater tot like vector in my life anymore. I don't really buy them at home. I don't know. I love them so much, but I don't really buy them at home. I used to though. Was it Orida, you know, that brand? What does Orida mean? Oregon, Idaho? Orida, toaster hash browns. Remember these? Do they still have those? I don't know. What the hell is this floating through the air? Those little plant feather things, what do you call them? Seed pods that float through the air? Just floated by out here. I'm sitting by the fire pit in the late afternoon. There's no fire going. Talking about hash browns, okay? Yeah, the toaster hash browns were good. Then I remember at work, like back before the pandemic, which feels like such a long time ago now, we actually did like a team building exercise and went to an escape room. And that was when we had to stick your hand inside a blender or something. Obviously, it wasn't set up to hurt you, but it was like very frightening. It was like transgressive to stick your hand in the blender. I think I volunteered to do it to get the keys out of the blender or something. It's kind of interesting. It was in Brooklyn. Then afterwards, we went to this bar, and they had, instead of like nachos, they had hash browns, but with all those toppings. It was so good. And I'm sorry, tater tots, right? Tater tots are basically just miniature hash browns, would you say? I think so. But recently, I did get some hash browns. There's a place, I forget what it was. It's like plant-based sandwiches or something. Somewhere Glen Ridge or Glen Rock, somewhere a little to the north of me. Yeah, I got like a, yeah, my wife ordered it when I was at, we were visiting my father, and we needed some food, so we ordered out, and I got like a vegan lobster roll. Whoa, look at all those ants. All these ants on the sand here. Damn, it's like covered with ants. Weird, man. In the sunlight. Ants in the sunlight. Yeah, lobster roll made out of heart of palm. You know, what the heck is heart of palm? Are these like delicious little cylinders? Is it really a palm tree that they cut open and get? Do they have to like chop down an entire palm tree to get like heart of palm? You know what I'm talking about, heart of palm? It feels like they're kind of pickled too, maybe. But they use that as a vegan replacement for lobster meat. It was really good. It was a vegan lobster roll. But they also had these hash browns in the traditional rounded rectangular shape. And they were so good. So good. I got them a couple times. And yeah, and then there was that place, Lori's. This is going back a long, long time to around the era of like 1990 or 91. It was on Varick Street there in New York City. I was working at this place called Imaging International. And one of my co-worker, Eric, we used to go out to lunch at this place, Lori's, that was around the corner. And I do remember getting the hash brown there. It's funny thinking back on this stuff because I was a vegetarian since like 1987, but I only turned vegan in 2018. So back before 2018, I could eat a lot more stuff. You know, I could just go out and not worry about it so much. Now it feels like sometimes it just feels like such a hassle to get anything to eat. I know it's my own decision, but yeah, it's pretty wild. I'm not going back. I want to stay vegan. But yeah, they had the hash browns too there. It was pretty good. And also, like, coming in like that wax paper, I guess the idea is like it's kind of hot to the touch. They put the wax paper on it, and just that thin wax paper is enough that it won't burn your fingers. Or so I guess, also not that it's going to burn you, but it's very greasy. So if you don't want to touch it and get the grease all over your fingers, you have the wax paper. They still have wax paper. Like, I remember growing up, my mother would have wax paper in the kitchen. I don't have it. Do I need it? Do I need wax paper in my kitchen? Like, what do you use it for? It doesn't sound, it's just like paper coated with wax. I don't know. Is that like, I guess it's food grade wax, so it's okay. It doesn't, you know what I mean? But like the wax paper kind of little pockets to put hash browns or tater tots in, is that still a thing, or they just use plastic now? I don't know. Yeah, I'm trying to think. Like, there's so many places to go out to eat that are no more. remember that place, Mini Grow? That place was so good. Remember, it was Mini Grow. It was not far from where I worked. I used to go there all the time to get these spinach noodles, right? It was spinach noodles and all sorts of other great stuff. And it was one of those places where you have to walk down and tell them what you want, you know. But the spinach noodles were amazing. It's a part of a chain. The main chain was called Honey Grow, but they created this miniature offshoot called Mini Grow. it just seemed like, and it didn't last super long, right? But that was really good. Then very briefly, there was that place Zen Burger. Not far from where I worked, it was like a real early vegan fast food place. I think it was made by the people that had that restaurant, Zen Palette, a vegan restaurant. I think it's all gone now. That Zen Burger didn't last too long because that food actually wasn't very good. That's the thing. I mean, I think that they've really come a long way with the vegan junk foods, you know, like they call comfort foods or whatever. It's all like much better now. This was like, what, 10 or 15 years ago. It was all rather bland, and that's the last thing you want. When you tell someone this is vegan, it needs to be like delicious and satisfying. And they've really fixed it at this point. I think back then they were still sort of struggling with some of the formulas. But yeah, there was also a place nearby here in Montclair. I think it was just called Montclair Vegan. And they did have the loaded tots. They sort of, it's just tater tots just covered with all sorts of like cheese and sour cream and all sorts of stuff. But it's all vegan, you know. The thing is, like, vegan junk food is not healthy. It's just vegan, you know. Vegan is not necessarily healthy. But thank goodness, in theory, these hash browns and tater tots are still potentially vegan, as long as they're not cooked in the same oil as stuff that's not vegan. Is that, some people don't mind that. I do mind that. Should I mind that? If there's some particles of chicken, microscopic chicken particles sticking to my delicious tater tots, should I care? I do. I don't know. I would prefer it to be pure. Pure vegan, yes. Why am I coughing? I just started coughing. Jeez. Oh, well, I just had one of those burrito bueno, the sweet potato and cactus burrito. I get them at Whole Foods. I think it's very spicy. I think that's why I'm sniffling and coughing. It's very spicy. But if I liked it, why don't I have it at home? Like, do you have to, like, how do you make it? Do you have to deep fry it at home? Or, no, you can just fry it in a pan, right? Or the toaster hash browns, you can just make in a toaster oven. But I mean, being that it probably is not particularly healthy, it's probably better. I haven't been like having it all the time, but loaded tots, though, it's a good one. They're so good, tater tots, right? But is tater tots, is that a a brand name, or is that like a generic term? I think they just call them tots, you know, tater tots, like potato. Like tater is another is sort of like a slang term for potato, and tots is like a term for children. They're the potato children. Yeah, tater tots. Yeah, yeah. But hash browns, the heck is hash? Isn't hash more like a meat? Because I remember growing up when I was not vegetarian or vegan, there was a kind of there was definitely like a lot of meats that I really was fascinated by. There was something called hash. Oh, what the hell was it? It was called something hash. It was like, I know my father made it in like a frying pan. It had like onions and, what the heck was the name of it? It was something hash. I just remember it being so good. I think maybe chopped up like green onion. See, I'm remembering meat memories now. What the hell is it called? Something hash. I can't remember the name of it, but I just remember I really liked it. And then there was, of course, Underwood deviled ham. And it was sort of like in a can, and there's like a picture of Satan on there, and it's just sort of like this whipped, it's almost like meat with the consistency of sort of like a whipped cream kind of thing. It's like this sort of spreadable meat product. What the hell's up with that? Then of course the Vienna sausages, which always were very bizarre. Slim Jims, of course. We always had Slim Jims growing up. See, I had a non-vegan upbringing. And then, of course, the pigs in a blanket was very popular, hors d'oeuvre back in the day. Do they still have those? I don't think I've run across the vegan version of those, but we used to get the vegetarian version of the corn dogs. Morningstar Farm had like the microwavable vegetarian corn dogs. Those were pretty good. But pigs in a blanket were little miniature hot dogs that are wrapped in that sort of flaky crust kind of hors d'oeuvre-y kind of. You know, the thing is, I think in general, I haven't really had many hors d'oeuvres in recent history. I don't know, hors d'oeuvres, I guess, haven't crossed over into the vegan world. Right? Because I remember as a kid, everyone, I think it may just be, I don't think people really do hors d'oeuvres as much anymore. Like those little pastries, like it's like almost like a little quiche, right? With that sort of flaky crust and like ham and cheese and spinach in this little cup. You know what I'm talking about? Like hors d'oeuvres. I know there's much more hors d'oeuvres than that, but and then the pigs in a blanket, as they called them. And my grandmother, when I just started turning vegetarian, and of course, you know, being kind of a pain at family gatherings, I'm like, listen, I'm vegetarian. I don't eat that stuff. She's like, I remember, Frankie, when you were little and I brought out the pigs in a blanket, you would just take all of them for yourself and eat them all. You loved meat when you were little. I'm like, I know, but I've grown as a person. It's we evolve in terms of our sensibilities over time, Grant. Nanny, I called her Nanny, you know. Because my grandfather was Nono, and she was supposed to be Nona. But as a little kid, Nona, there's no way you're going to say that as a little kid. I say Nanny, Nanny. So I started that tradition, Nanny and Nono. There's no way, Nona. That's a very unnatural thing to say as a child. Nona. Nanny. All day long they've been like huge construction projects across the street. I don't know what the hell they're doing. They're digging up. There's like the police car is overseeing it, and there's just all these like construction vehicles, and they dug into the street. I don't know if it's like a pipe or maybe they're adding like gas service to a house or something. I don't know. It's a big project over there. That's why I'm sitting in the backyard. It's too distracting sitting on my porch with these police cars and backhoes and bulldozers and all this other crap. And these guys are constantly like yelling. They're trying to figure out what they're doing. And it's like the utility crew out front. Oh, man. Yeah, a few hours ago I sat here and I could not come up with anything to talk about. You know, it's hard, you know, with this show, The Overnightscape, and I start off talking about something, right? I don't ever start off and just say, hi, I'm sitting, I have something to talk about, right? I couldn't think of anything. I'm like, geez. But it happens, you know, it happens. And then went back inside, and a while later, I'm like, hash browns, yes. That is the answer. Hash browns are the answer. Yes! Yeah, in fact, I was feeling so out of it. I don't know what it is. It's just a weird day. I actually laid down for a few minutes, and I did briefly have some sort of what seemed to be a communication with my father, who passed away last week. Not even 2 weeks ago now. Like 12 days ago, he passed away. And I had been kind of worried because, you know, like with my mother, I was able to have some like visions of communicating with her briefly, seeing her in the afterlife. Not to say that any of this is legitimate, but it's just something that I experienced, this type of... it's not like... I know a lot of people say, oh, it's just in your imagination. There's not anything about supernatural, whatever. But I know what imagination is, and this other thing is different. It's a psychic communication, I suppose you could call it. And with my mother, who passed away 2 years ago, there's really only been three moments, brief moments of communication in that entire time. Two of them were fairly recently. So with my father, it was very strange because it was Tuesday, 2 weeks ago, actually 2 weeks ago exactly now. Tuesday night, I heard this communication in my mind from him, but he was still breathing. He was still there. In the nursing home, he was still breathing. He was in the end stage, and it was weird. It was almost like talking to someone over like a walkie-talkie or something, a very distant, like crackly, like low-resolution voice. Just for like a few seconds. And but he was still alive, so that's really confused me. And then after he passed away, I was not able to resolve anything. I tried to reach out. I could not connect anything. So a little bit earlier, I was like, it was that really far away and that crackly walkie-talkie like kind of audio. And he just said, he's okay, you know, don't worry about me, I'm doing all right. Again, very brief, but I'm very happy it finally happened. I finally sort of got something. Again, there's nothing conclusive about it. It could all be in my imagination. I understand that. But it's the first, since he passed away, it's the first time I've felt any communication with him. But not a lot of information. It just sort of sounded like he was sort of in a place that was very kind of... Yeah, I can't even really... I don't know what it was. It just felt kind of far away, and that he had been having strange experiences, maybe. That was sort of implied. Definitely a weird day. I released this morning the Night Station Revival number 1. And this is strange. This is a very strange production. Yeah, you can hear it now. It's out. Night Station Revival. I like the logo, how it came out. I used that that alternate Night Station logo I did a long time ago, using that font Hardy Har Har. And then for the part that says Revival, I actually used a ITC Rondo, which is the font used on the other logo, the main logo. And I did a gradient from orange to purple. Kind of dug how that looked. But yeah, you know, as I described on that episode, you know, my father passing away and making me look at my own life and the time I have left on this planet. And, you know, I've achieved this, you know, working on this over Nightscape Underground, which is this amazing world of audio that is actually real. It is actually over 13,000 hours of material. And I realized, you know, that with whatever time I have left, I really need to focus on this. I've actually accomplished something, which whoever could, you know, it's kind of rare to say you've accomplished something creatively like that. Right? So I really need to focus on that exclusively. But there's all this other stuff hanging around in the back of my mind that it's not, it's hard to describe because I know, again, you can say it's years and decades of creative aspirations and abandoned projects and projects that are suspended but not necessarily canceled, and just in the back of my mind all this stuff is just lurking there, and it does feel like it has weight. It feels like it is almost material and heavy to carry around, right? All that stuff. And so I'm like, you know, I really have to figure, it's not as easy as just saying, okay, I'm just going to focus on one thing and the other stuff, whatever. It's just sort of there in my mind. It's like this heavy object in my mind that I just want to get out. And so by far the heaviest of those objects, abandoned projects, is Night Station, which has sort of had multiple different versions and manifestations, but I just need to get it out, right? It's sitting there, inert, but still with this promise that something's going to happen with it someday. So I felt like I could not just say, okay, it's over. It's just going to keep sitting there and bothering me. So I realized I really should transform it into something, actually manifest it in some way, and I decided to do it as a show here on the Overnightscape Underground. And even talking about it, this is so strange and weird, and it does seem super self-indulgent. It's, to me, it's therapeutic. That's the main thing. It's like I needed to do this to sort of get rid of this heavy thing in my mind. And I do feel like it's partially working. I think it's working. So instead of just canceling everything, I'm just, Night Station Revival is just, all things Night Station are now in this show. I did the first episode. I just released it this morning. And I think it's fast. I listened back to the whole thing. I think it's fascinating. The whole thing. It is a bizarre thing in my life, the Night Station thing. And I get more into it in the show there. But it feels like by transforming it into a show, I can get it out of my mind. It's being fulfilled, but it's something that is low impact for me, right? I can just sit and record about these topics, and then that, right? It's fairly easy to do, as opposed to trying to actually implement these things, which in the past were like businesses and the VR thing and all this fictional concepts of alternate reality shopping malls and all this other stuff. I really have, you know, I cannot at this point entertain these massive alternate projects, so I turned it into a minor project, a doable project. So check out Night Station Revival if you so wish. It's like my therapy session. Getting it out of my mind. But I felt like, yeah, like the past couple days I've been feeling like, am I really doing this? Like, this is insane. Like, why am I doing Night Station Revival? I hope you understand. It is such a relief to get it out finally. I almost think that when we describe these things as having weight and having heft, hefty, 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 yes. Hefty thought forms, I think, is what they call them. It could be that actually in some alternate space, those thoughts in your mind actually are like physical objects, right? But it does seem that Night Station has sort of embodied all the aspects of, what would you say, projects that would be more on the commercial side, right? Making money kind of thing. Whereas the Overnight Escape Underground is non-commercial. And I talked about it being a weird kind of cosmic counterweight to the Overnight Escape Underground. Anyway, that's the whole story of Night Station Revival number one. It's very strange. Very strange indeed. Talking about audio projects, this is someone else's project. Captain Afterland is complete. This is an audio drama series by the folks that do Edict Zero, FIS. I've talked about these shows quite a bit. So Edict Zero is a series about these federal agents on this other planet, like investigating mysterious stuff. It's so good. And this is I think will be done within the next year or so. But they did an offshoot show called Captain Afterland with this kind of eccentric character called the Captain, and his main thing is he has a frying pan that he can hit people with and stuff. The Captain. And it was such a great series. And you don't have to listen to Edict Zero to enjoy Captain Afterland. So just look up Captain Afterland. And it's also, let me see what the website is. They have a Facebook thing, Edict Zero. But I think it's edictzero.com? Let me see. Yeah, edictzero.com. EDICTZERO.com. It's just so good. And they're completely Creative Commons, open source, non-commercial, just like what we do here in the Overnight Escape Underground. So it's very, it's kind of a similar philosophy as we have. They just do it for the love of it. I've been really fascinated by the people behind it. I think they're mostly based in Britain and Europe and stuff. I even asked them if they ever did any behind-the-scenes stuff, and they really haven't. They published one picture of a few cast members at an audio drama conference, I think in Wales, last year. Interesting stuff. But check out Captain Afterland. It's so it's a sort of a self-contained thing, and each episode's like an hour, hour and a half. So there's six episodes, I think. That's six episodes. So sort of equivalent to sort of time-wise, perhaps, to a season of a streaming TV show. So I strongly recommend it. This one, because the Captain is also in Edict Zero, but this is where he goes to this kind of other world kind of place. Very interesting stuff. And I really don't know if there's anything else out there quite like it. And I love how they're on, everything's on the Internet Archive, and everything. They do it in this non-commercial sense, so. I mean, I would love to, at some point, once all these series are done, I would love to add it to this, to our archive as well, which that's something that I'm interested in it, but I would want to sort of talk to them about it before I did that. There is that other audio drama that I did preserve here in the archive that I don't know if anyone's ever listened to it. You got to listen to this one. It's called A Career in the Weeklies, by this guy, Mark Gorsey from Canada. And I was in contact with him, and we worked together sort of rescuing it, because by the time I was looking into it, it was lost on the Internet. It was not online anywhere anymore, so I really wanted to preserve it, and he really helped out with that. So check it out. That's really cool. It's about this guy in Canada working for this weird, like, weekly newspaper. Really good. Really good stuff. It's in our archive here. He's done a new show called The Middle-Aged Candy Store, which is on YouTube and other places. So you can check that out, too, by Mark Gorsey. Audio dramas, yeah. Well, that's another thing I wanted to... another genre I was interested in. But, again, listen, it's hard to... you have to just focus on one thing. Don't it's hard, right? As a creative person, you're always wanting to try out all sorts of different things. But it's better to focus on one thing. Thank you.
Yes, there you go.
Yes, yes. Anyways, today's show is called Sluggo Yes, Worm Boy No. It's quite a title. I think that's the first time I've said it out loud. Sluggo Yes, Worm Boy No. And it's funny that the font I used on that is actually I was in my neighbor's yard, and they had this old sign for the swimming pool, like a safety sign with little cartoons of, like, for kids how to be safe in the swimming pool. And I'm like, yeah, what font is that? I know that font. Like, the lowercase y has sort of a straight serif on the bottom. I'm like, I mean, I know it. And I found it very quickly. It's Lubalin Graph. Yes. It's weird. I haven't really seen Lubalin Graph a lot lately. It's that font by Herb Lubalin, who made Avant-Garde and perhaps most significantly in recent history, Serif Gothic, the font that's everywhere. The Stranger Things logo, for example, is Serif Gothic. But Lubalin Graph was kind of like Avant-Garde with slab serifs thrown on there, right? And so I'm like, yeah, that's the font. So I used that font for typesetting this one. Yeah, it's weird. It was interesting because, again, most font, I obsess on fonts every day, obviously, of my life. And so I sort of was able to remember that this font hadn't really come across in a long time. So the image is a painting of sort of a seaport. There's like a little castle thing on the left, and there's some people getting onto like a raft or a little boat, and there's sailing ships in the distance. I was looking for like pictures of like a seaport or something, because I think that also is sort of symbolic of themes that I've been dealing with lately, sort of like entering the afterlife and things like that. But yeah, this is a public domain painting from the National Gallery of Art. And this is nga.gov. Is that part of the Smithsonian? And it's public domain. It is called Harbor at Sunset. It's from the late 17th century, so it was painted in 16-something. Wow. And it was painted by a follower of Claude Lorrain, right? So they're saying this is someone who... Ooh, they have the provenance, too. Wow. Painted by someone who was a fan of another painter. So they don't even know who painted this. And because it's from 16... sometimes in 1600s, it's public domain. Yes. I think it's been enough 100 years that this could be in public domain, yeah. I thought it was a cool image. Can you imagine someone sitting there in, like, 1690 and like, oh, I'm going to paint a painting now. Like, what the hell are they doing in life? It's not even this. It's not even the 1700s yet. It's the 1600s. Jeez. It was sold in 1830 to George John Vernon, the 5th Baron Vernon. Wow, they have a lot of provenance here. What happened to this painting? Anyway, I use that as the basis. And, of course, I put the cover of the book in the corner. I've been doing that for all the show art. Sort of the symbol of our project, the Overnight Skip Underground. And I do like how the Lubalin Graph looks. And you do see the lowercase y in the word boy with that very distinctive flat serif at the bottom. Sluggo yes, worm boy no. So what is this? What is this phrase? So I thought this phrase sounded a lot. It is like a fake palindrome, right? And if you recall, a few episodes ago, I was having a conversation with the AI program Bard by Google, and I have not continued having conversations with AI since then because it was very frustrating. But I tried to have Bard. I was trying to test it out. I'm like, hey, can you give me some fake palindromes? And it's like, sure. And it gave me real palindromes, right? And I kept going back and forth like so much trying to teach Bard what a fake palindrome is. It simply could not understand it or could not process it. It was something it could not even begin to understand. It was interesting. I found something that the AI, this current AI, could not understand. So I've always been a fan of palindromes, right? A man, a plan, a canal, Panama. Sit on a potato pan, Otis. No devil lived on. Rise to vote, sir, right? Daedalus 9, peninsula dead. Like, I love palindromes, but they have a certain sound to them. They're these short phrases that just have this weird kind of tone or sound to them. So a fake palindrome is a phrase that sounds like a palindrome, but is not. So, sluggo, yes. Worm boy, no. Sounds like a palindrome, but it's not. What would that be backwards? Anyab nrau say ogles. So it's not a palindrome at all. But it's a fake palindrome. It's sluggo, yes. Worm boy, no. It sounds like a palindrome, but it's not. So in a way, like for me, like fake palindromes represent sort of one of the last bastions of life that AIs can't figure it out yet. So like people could still, humans have to make the fake palindromes for now. I'm sure the AIs will figure out how to make fake palindromes eventually, but for now it is a human art, the art of the fake palindrome. And I made another one up. Sluggo yes, worm boy no. There you go. That's the whole story of that. What does that sound? A helicopter? Piece of equipment? I don't know what it is. What could it be? I don't know. No, it's a helicopter. Now, let me look on that flight radar, see what helicopter it is. Let's see. We'll get the helicopter. Ooh, what the hell? There's no helicopter. What? There's no helicopters on the chart here. What the hell? It's an unlisted helicopter. I hear it, though. You hear it? Maybe it's not a helicopter. Oh, wait. I do see one in the distance. It's too far away, though. It's up in Hackensack. It's a Bell 407. That can't be it. It's much too far away. No. What the hell? Maybe it's like one of those black helicopters from, like, the secret government forces. I never understood the whole black helicopter thing, but I guess... I swear I'm hearing it. Do you hear this? It's the mystery helicopter, okay? It's the mystery helicopter. Yeah. Yes. So, I wonder, should I get, like, pinball records? I haven't ordered this yet. It's called Jackpot Plays Pinball, Volume 1 and 2. And it's like there's two separate vinyl albums of which they play the soundtracks of like the top pinball machines, right? Let's see if I can get this going here. Paste. I really dig the idea, but I don't know if I really need it. Do I need pinball records? I thought there was a video where they're sort of describing it. Excuse me. Yeah, let's see. Is this it? Yeah, they have... they do Black Knight 2000. That's a great one. Give me your money! Tales of the Arabian Nights, Attack from Mars, Taxi, Pinbot, Funhouse, Medieval Madness, Theater of Magic, Banzai Run. That's a good one. And Fish Tales. Where's the video, though? They had a video on... What the hell? There's a video somewhere. Here it is. Okay. Yeah, nice. I think that's Black Knight 2000, yeah. Only 500 copies available. Pre-order. And I saw somewhere it's not coming out... okay. It's coming out... Oh, within 1 month. Okay. Maybe I should order it. I don't know, though. I don't really listen to records that much. I'm too lazy. I always just use the Bluetooth speaker. But if I could listen to Pinball Machines, that might be good. You know what I'm saying? I want to, but it seems like it's like a waste of money, though, at some level, too, to have pinball records. You know what I mean? I want it. I want pinball records. What is this? Moog celebrates 70th anniversary with musical web app? What is this all about? They launched a web app. What? Is this another one of those stories? Listen, I look on these, you know, this news feed or whatever, and they show me stories that are like 2 years old. It pisses me off. Welcome to Mini Moog Factory. Yeah, I'm 100% sure it's pronounced Moog, not Moog, you know. But I know if you just read it, it's M-O-O-G, so you're going to think Moog. Enter the Mini Moog Factory. What is it, though? What's the point of it? Is it... Groovy, man. Oh, these are sounds from, like, Bob Marley and the Wailers, Stir It Up. Yeah, hold on. Let me take this call. Let me put you on pause. Yeah, it was my wife, Denise. Yeah, she was having trouble getting into the driveway. We had to go talk to the policeman that was out there. And he moved back, and she barely made it. There's that front end loader with the big claw thing right by our driveway. But she made it in. Anyway, yeah, I guess I'll get finished up here. I'm glad I was able to get past my blockage earlier trying to record, right? So this is Bob Marley and the Wailers. Frank Zappa, Waka Jawaka. Oh, I guess they found the patches of Yes, You and I. Wings Jet. All right, looks like a lot of fun. The Mini Moog Factory. I don't know if it's from today or from 2 years ago. Who knows anymore? What do they call it? Mini Moog Factory? Is that what it's called? Yeah. Mini Moog Factory. Hold on a second. Yes, that was a lot of fun. Anyways, thank you so much for patching into this a bit short, but a full episode. You know, this is the thing. You know, when I first started, like, the other side, my goal was to have each side, like, at least be the same length, right? So the first part of the show can be about 40 minutes. But it usually goes a lot longer, but it didn't have to be. That's my rule. And we're at 42:26 so far, so we made it. It's long enough. Yes. Thanks for patching in to this episode. I know I'm a little out of it today, but we're here, of course. This is the Overnightscape. I'm your host, Frank Edward Nora. We're here in the Overnightscape Underground, a radio station inside a book. And you get all your information at onsug.com. All the latest shows. You can participate as well in a show called Overnightscape Central. I think we're back on track now. PQ just released the Abbey Road episode for the Beatles. And then coming up next, and you can participate in this because you should have a week or so to do this. Let It Be, and of course also Let It Be Naked, the revised version of Let It Be, the Beatles' final released album. If you have anything to say about that, please just listen to the latest episode of Overnightscape Central to get all the information you need to participate, and we would love to hear from you. And I think we may continue on with the Beatles stuff, I don't know, with past masters, anthologies, solo work. I wouldn't mind doing more Beatles stuff. I love Beatles. I love listening to the Beatles albums and analyzing them, and of course, obsessing on how Paul is dead, all sorts of fun stuff. Love it. But yeah, this project, as I mentioned earlier, the Overnightscape Underground, a radio station inside a book, is over 11,000 episodes of shows, like a show like this one, the Overnightscape, and so many other shows. Over 13,000 hours. It's over a year and a half of audio. Can you imagine? And now you know about it. You know about the Overnightscape Underground. Unlike so many other people in this world, they don't know about it. You know about it. It is your lifelong companion. We are your radio pals. We'll always be here for you. And, you know, as I'm anticipating and intending to make sure that this project is all set up to move on into the future, and we're very intent on people listening not just in the near but in the far future as well. And though I may never know, if all those pesky time travelers never come back in time and say, "Hi, Frank, I'm from the year 4500. Long-time listener, first-time time traveler. They never come back in time. They never come back in time and let me know that they've been listening in the year 4500. maybe it's against their rules, the time travel rules. What a bunch of crap. I want to hear from these people. I want to know if people in the future are listening. Come on, man. But as I mentioned, we are a non-commercial project. We have a very unique style, and it's a whole thing. Come on. It's all inside the book. You can buy the book, too. It's print on demand. I am working on the next edition. Slowly but surely, it's coming along. So you can buy the book from 2021, print on demand, actual physical book, full color covers, black and white interior, 700 pages. You really should. If you don't have one, grab one. I set it at the lowest possible price. I don't make any money on it because this is a non-commercial project. It's not about money. It's about the love of doing the audio stuff. You see what I'm saying? I think so. Anyways, you know what I'm saying. Check it out. Now look at this fire pit. The other night we were here and we had to put sand all over this. There was a big log. Remember that song Big Log by Robert Plant? That's a good song. How'd it go? I've got a new freeway. He's singing about freeways. Remember that? Well, oh, there's a freeway coming up. Look at this. A freeway of the cosmic mind. And you are about to take the on-ramp. Speaking of the exit ramps, this is an on-ramp. You're going on to the freeway of the mind known as the other side.
The problem with the motherfucking world today is we ain't got enough cheese monkeys. I said the problem with the motherfucking world today is we don't have enough cheese monkeys. I'm making pop music that doesn't mean shit, and like all the other stars, I'm paid to do it. It may sound corny, you may say screw it, but they play it on the radio, you listen to it. Like the state of music these days, so much stupid crap is all that they play. I'm trying to find meaning in the things they say, or even a little color, but I just see gray. That's why I bring you the shit funky, bass lines chunky, ooh, like cheese monkey. Come on, baby, get spunky. The problem with the motherfucking world today is we ain't got enough cheese monkeys. I said the problem with the motherfucking world today is we ain't got enough cheese monkeys. Let me get some cheese monkeys. Can I get some cheese monkeys? I want my cheese monkeys. Let me get some cheese monkeys. I like cheese monkeys and the way they taste. I like them with milk, I like them on my face. I even eat them in outer space. They help me out when I don't know what to say. Somebody told me there's a book by that name. I was like, god damn, it's such a dang shame. I thought I made them up, apparently not. I guess I'm not exactly sure what they are. I think they're what happens when a 5-year-old kid tries to do the things with Cheetos, the things I did. I was arranging them, trying to make the Statue of Liberty, but I thought it was called the Empire State Building. And with this confusion, they came to life, started to reproduce, had more than one wife. So they got out of control, started taking over the world. The only one who could stop them was a little girl, but I was scared of her, so I couldn't ask for help. Didn't even know about the problem myself. The problem with the motherfucking world today is we ain't got enough cheese monkeys. I said the problem with the motherfucking world today is we don't have enough cheese monkeys. Sometimes it seems it's all a cheesy love song. I wanna rewind time, they got it all wrong. What about some philosophy, some play to be free, some dancing, baby, come on and freak with me. Peeking at your thong, we're taking hits from a bong, trying to understand the mystery why God was pissed at me. Now it's like I'm blessed, money and hoes for free, sold out shows for Ferrari photos. Anyway, I don't know the point of life. I got too much money, give to those with strife. True, nobody loves you when you're down and out. Now I got my cheese monkeys, this shit all about. The problem with the motherfucking world today is we ain't got enough cheese monkeys. I said the problem with the motherfucking world today is we ain't got enough cheese monkeys. Let me get some cheese monkeys. Can I get some cheese monkeys? I want my cheese monkeys. Let me get some cheese monkeys.
Thank you. Prepare for Operation Starblade. Calling Starfighter Geosword. Calling Geosword. Come in, Geosword. The enemy task force, mechanized planet Red Eye, just reached the Federation of Planets and is approaching our mother planet. Our strategy is to neutralize Red Eye and defeat the menace to our mother planet. Aim at the power source generator of Red Eye. All energy converges on the power stone, which is inside of Octopus. Good luck, Geosword. Over.
In this house.
Nanny and the Professor.
The lemonade is 10 cents flat. 5 cents a glass.
This is a proper pickle.
I think I liked this family better before it went commercial.
To represent the Partridges. We want you to listen to a recording made by our family.
Look, you go home and practice. Come back and see me in about 10 years, okay?
10 years? We'll be a show business legend by then.
Terrific. I'll listen to you on the oldies but goodies.
Setting two baguettes, it's superb.
Oh, no!
Will you marry me?
Love American style. This is Tom Jones. Joining Tom this fall will be Glenn Campbell, Diane Carroll, Steve and Edie, and the Supremes.
Mr. Spock. Then off for a walk before bed.
Censors. They are the abominable snowmen of the television business. Everyone has heard of them, but few people have seen them. In the beginning of a two-part article, TV Guide talks to the men and women who review the scripts and programs before they go on the air. Find out who censors what we see and why in the new issue of TV Guide.
van was a 1970s VW bus that had been converted into a camper. It was painted bright green and had a peace sign on the side. The puppets had been traveling in the van for a few weeks, and they had already seen a lot of interesting things. Masmweed was a wizard puppet. He was tall and thin, with a long white beard. He wore a pointed hat and a long black robe. He was a very powerful wizard, and he was always getting into trouble. Fendi Zocco was a green owl magician puppet. He was shorter and plumper than Masmweed, and he wore a green hat and a green robe. He was a very kind and gentle puppet, and he was always helping others. Magic Smup was a garden gnome puppet. He was short and stocky, with a long white beard and a red hat. He was a very funny puppet, and he always made the other puppets laugh. Okunpino was a walrus puppet. He was big and heavy, with the long tusks and a thick coat of fur. He was a very gentle and kind puppet, and he was always there for his friends. The puppets had been to a lot of convenience stores, big box stores, rest stops, and especially weird roadside attractions. They had seen a lot of strange and wonderful things, and they had had a lot of adventures. One day, the puppets were driving down the road when they saw a sign for a roadside attraction called the World's Largest Ball of String. They decided to stop and check it out. When they got there, they saw that the ball of string was really big. It was so big that it took the puppets several hours to walk around it. They also saw a lot of other strange and wonderful things at the roadside attraction, including a giant ball of yarn and a giant ball of rubber bands. The puppets had a lot of fun at the roadside attraction, and they learned a lot about the history of string. They also learned that there are a lot of strange and wonderful things in the world, and that it is important to be open to new experiences.
Rolling forever, rolling away. Out there in forever.